listening to Fakeologist Audio Chat. To connect to our always-on and always-streaming audio chat, go to fakeologist.com/radio3. To participate in the chat, go to fakeologist.com/audio chat. Each day, we compress and upload the day's chat, be it big or small. Leave a quick message, do a whole show. All are welcome when it's related to fakeology. Now, on with today's audio.
Paul Billings, or actually, that's not right. He was played by Michael Billings. Okay, I'll stuff that one up. But Ed Bishop played Ed Straker. Ed Bishop was known to the director of, well, his name I've just forgotten again. 2001 Space Odyssey. They knew each other, so there was a link there. There's a link between them and then that whole thing about NASA and Harlington Studios being polar opposites.
Then when you mentioned there that the first men in the moon, Terry Thomas.
Yeah. And then I looked at that, and there was Ed Bishop playing an American astronaut that lands on the Russians. Well, the English get there first, and then the Americans arrive, and then the Russians. So the Americans and Russians arrive exactly the same time. They're beaten by the English. That's interesting, an interesting, funny type film to watch. But yeah, it was the mouse that roared.
The mouse that roared. That's it. The mouse that roared. Terry Thomas, not the first man in the moon. But another strange coincidence. Oh, by the way, I brought the streamer bot in just so if we do anything good, at least we've got it to memory. When I was saying to you the other day, Peter Cushing, Christopher Lee, and Vincent Price were born within 24 hours of each other. You know, or a day and a half or something.
Well, it's interesting that Paul Foster and Ed Bishop, the two leads of UFO, died on the same day.
Ah. Yeah, there's strange coincidences again. But tell us that one about NASA, you know, what you're talking about, Space 99 and the Masquerade.
UFO, which went into production, would have been in the 68, 69. They would have been running around getting props and sets built for that TV show that first screened in 70. Is about a space agency masquerading as a film studio on the Earth that's defending, and they've got a base on the moon which is defending the aliens which are abducting humans and taking the humans back to Mars or wherever. The aliens use the humans as a biological robot, and then they send them back as aliens to abduct more humans. And NASA is a film studio masquerading as a space agency, in my eyes. And the cast of UFO had Ed Bishop, whose first film roles were in what's the name again? I can't remember the...
Mouse That Roared.
No, the director of 2001 Space Odyssey. What's his name? The director of The Shining. Kubrick. Kubrick. Yeah, so... Ed Bishop was in two Stanley Kubrick productions in the early 60s, so they knew each, like he was kind of known to him. Whether there's some kind of link somewhere between Gerry Anderson's model building expertise and the NASA rockets. So it would have been the same guys, though, working on 2001 Space Odyssey, which I think was filmed a lot of it.
In the Twin Towers, we were discussing that a minute ago.
Yeah, and the same guys would have been working on Star Wars, etc. It's like Pinewood Studios, all those British studios. There's a link in there somewhere. There's something that I can definitely see.
I can see a link there straight away from the cameras that were used by NASA to then coming over to Pinewood Studios. Now we're talking about model makers. Also, we're talking about NASA in respects to Kubrick, who's a filmmaker. We were also discussing that building the Twin Towers with somewhere inside, obviously, an office that people working, not people that work legitimately there, talking, you know, the artistic director, people that run the place. That would be the perfect place for them to do something like that.
It would be perfect. And you'd have that, no one would have any. They would have been very heavily protected by private security firms.
Yeah, and definitely, and also what a good place to practice building some towers and then bringing them down on, you know, because I do believe a lot of the footage we see of the towers collapsing with all you know, with the dust ejecting out sideways. I believe they're models.
I think really so, because that's where the Judy Woods series came in, to say, how could something just disappear like that? But if you watch the explosions, and I mean, one of the biggest wake-up links that I saw when I was first watching the towers come down on TV that night in 2001 was, straight away I thought, this looks like an Independence Day. And some of the scenes from Independence Day are straight out of the crowds running with the smoke coming behind them. So you'll find the same, if Judy Wood analysed the Independence Day explosions, she'd come up with the same theory, dustification, whereas it actually is just pixels and CGI. Yeah. Basically, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, oh yeah, definitely. I mean, the reason I think, obviously, the things attached to them, I mean, like when they showed you the film the moon landed, it was filmed off a TV. But, you know, yeah. they're never going to show you everything. It's like a magician.
No, it was blurry and blurry black and white. Nothing.
Oh, yeah.
It was terrible.
Also, when you do see the models of the Twin Towers, you know, if you just picture them for a minute, if they were massive buildings that we were looking at in New York on that day, then you'd have more cameras of them. There'd be different angles of them, you know, lots of different things like that. But it's almost like it was a model filmed from one angle and they used it as a template. Then super, you know, just sort of went through a lot of the videos that were released later, you know, with New York City on, and then shows you these.
Yeah. Where I think the links are is that you'll find before they do these things is like the actual special effects teams that would have done the Twin Towers footage would have been ex-Hollywood guys that would have worked on and been used. They probably did the whole thing under budget through when they were filming Independence Day, used that special effects team to do it there and then. That's why I think the moon landings would have been, all of that, the sets and the models and everything would have been utilised in England with both 2001 Space Odyssey production team and UFOs production teams.
Yeah, that covers any coincidences. Say, well, that's right. They would do a film in the moon landings. What are you on about, Stanley Kubrick? Sorry, they were filming, you know, 2001 Space
Odyssey. UFO, they had model sets of the lunar surface and, you know, very similar spacecraft type, you know, not 100 miles different from what we saw in the moon landings. Some of the craft that Gerry Anderson's crew were experts at making in the early 60s. And there's definitely a link between. So that all those things could have been done openly in a studio in front of, you know, as I was saying, like working a film, you don't know. I didn't realise what I was working on until I watched it afterwards. All these people could have been working on one particular scene of, you know, we're going to blow a building up, whatever, we want crumbling this, crumbling that. I haven't watched Independence Day again since, but there'll be a building very similar. You'll see the same special effects in that film.
And I'd say, do you remember the Man of Steel movie?
Yes. The second one. The new one with Russell Crowe.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah. When, wonderful, by the way, Zod, Jor-El having an Australian accent. what he says, it's so funny, but he says it in Australian accent, you know, rather than some, you know, English. Anyway, what was I saying then? Where was I?
We're talking about Superman, Man of Steel.
Oh yeah, Man of Steel. In that film, there's an action sequence where you see lots of buildings getting blown up, you know, and getting destroyed, this, that, and the other. And it's got a replica of, what was the one in America? The Oklahoma City bombing.
Yes.
It's got a replica of that in it where you see how that explodes. There's also one with the Twin Towers where the tower's leaning forward, you know, that footage was seen. There's about three or four different explosions which are all major explosions that we've actually seen before.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it just shows you that filmmakers are aware of angles they're showing.
Slow it down, put it on different angles. I mean, basically, the filmmaking is magic. You know, there's a good reason why they call it Hollywood, you know, for that area. And what you see, as I was saying the other day on Dark City, when the lead actor went back to England a month before they wrapped that film and they had a stand-in doing lots of the scenes where he was in there. Now, I guess for me, when I watch a lot of movies, I try and work out, is that the actor or is that just a stand-in? Because your mind tricks you into thinking that you're looking at that person being a thing as being something, and which in actual fact it's not. And the film industry is expert at this. You know, it's green screen, different camera angles. You can use a dead actor. It would be easy to have Carrie Fisher come and do a whole lot of work in this next installment or whatever, despite the fact she's dead, by just having a stunt double and some facial shots of her. And that you could work into a whole movie. You wouldn't know.
Do you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of Red Dwarf when they bring back the hologram.
Yeah, right. Okay. So, yeah, there's a bit of stuff in that show as well. You know, there's British science fiction going back to pre-Doctor Who with what's the guy's name? It was just before Doctor Who, almost similar. It was like Aliens Beneath England.
Oh, do you know what? If Delcroix was there, he knows all of them.
Same age as me. Same. These were early 60s. Really good stuff. There's stuff in this. There's predictive program in there all the time. It's same. If you go back and look at, there's a great science fiction magazine called IF, I think, with Isaac Asimov, used to do lots of work. All the best science fiction writers, the Huxleys, whatever, used to contribute.
Philip K. Dick.
All of those guys would write short stories, and that's where Philip K. Dick's Electric Sheep probably was published first. Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, yeah. The original for that giant movie of his. So I just think the film industry is so important, and it's trickery and us just wanting to believe stuff.
This fits into like what was shown. And then what, you know, so then obviously manifests itself in the real world. So the same, like, remember, everybody always ends up on this map thing. Why is map in the territory and all that crap? But it literally, they show you a picture, they tell you what it is, and then we just walk around believing it. Like you were saying earlier, when we say gullible, we're considering ourselves in it, but a little one step above, aren't we?
We're one step above, we know the trick, and every day you wake up a little bit more. You kind of go, things that are right in front of your face, you didn't see, like the other night driving home, seeing the 11s and 9s, and now our new speed limits are 11s and 9s every mile. I didn't notice that. I've been driving that road for fucking ages, you know, until I started thinking heavily, you know, where else are these things? And then I started seeing them everywhere. They're fucking everywhere, these, you know, 90, 11, 110 speed zones. For some reason, what's in front of you is what you're prepared to lose. You know, how much of your reality are you prepared to lose, though, and how much you, without losing your mind. You know what I mean? Like, you just can't. Once you start seeing everything, you really do know that there's something deliberately being pulled over us big time. And they're using the movies and TV and computers as their lead weapons. We are a few. There's very few that can see this, want to be able to accept it.
Without actually having to dig as well, because it's not, you don't have to be a genius to work things out. But it is, it's like you say, if you can just polarize what they show you, and just literally, like you were talking about them, the stand-ins, and you always have extra units disappearing.
Yeah, that's right. And so you don't know.
And they have a person there who's the same height, the same weight, the same wig, same makeup and everything.
But even if they turn around, it's just like stuntmen, stunt doubles. Don't look anything like their person, because it's really hard to find a stunt double for, you know, say a particular unusual looking actress or actor. But they'll just put a bloke with a wig on riding a horse, and 9 times out of 10, you'll never know. You'll never know that wasn't the actress or whatever doing that jump, because you don't want your brain doesn't perceive that you're being tricked.
Let me broach something with you. Right? And this, bear in mind, this is I'm just talking about inverting things. We're total 180 now. And I heard you talking the other day about the Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus.
Yeah, that's Terry Gilliam.
And Heath Ledger. Now, I've never seen the film, but imagine, just imagine, so everyone writing, imagine that they made Heath Ledger got the Oscar for being the best, you know,
best dead actor.
Brilliant as well. And if nothing else, watch that film just for that part. It's perfect. It's played perfectly. There's not many bad parts that I played better, actually.
Are you talking about Batman, the Joker?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely. But let's just suppose this is how twisted society is, and it's sort of 180. And the Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus, he supposedly died halfway through, didn't he? So they got other people in to play his part. Imagine he played all them. Yeah, imagine he played all them.
Yeah.
That's one way of stopping the Oscar.
No. Yeah.
And they could get away with that. And then I think one of them might have been Cate Blanchett or something. I don't know. I can't remember. But either way. Oh, no, that was the Elvis thing, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was Elvis. Bob Dylan.
Bob Dylan.
She played Bob Dylan in a movie. They had 12 different actors playing Bob Dylan, and somehow that they were female.
And I mean, and that's no mistake, just showing you something like that. You know, this is what I agree with Rachel and her crazy ideas. You know,
she's
crazy Rachel.
Thank you.
Yeah, there you go. No, I'm only joking. But yeah, so you know, the magic. It has to be magical. Do you remember the Hoaxbusters call when you're talking about the gimmick of having a woman on screen with a split screen? In Bewitched, you'd have Samantha's, you know, sister.
You'd have
a dark color. Yeah.
And you had Rider, I Dream of Jeannie, you had her evil star.
And in Knight Rider, they put a pencil mustache on David Hasselhoff, you know, to make him evil one. Yeah. So, you know, it is pushed. It's funny, but it's pushed. I'm sorry. But yeah, I agree with the trickery and these people at the top level. You know what? They've been doing it for years. They're good at it. Even if you work it out, who's going to believe you?
That's right. We being humankind, are so easily manipulated, as Edward Bernays said. And he was disparaging of the human being so stupid. But I can see what he's on about. You know, imagine having an intellect as like he did, you know, with the genetics from, you know, having Sigmund Freud's advice. He used to go on holiday with his uncle Sigmund in Germany and go for long walks discussing how stupid we are and how to trick us. And it's just using really simple techniques on our emotions to make us shop more. You know, tell us not to do something or you know.
Observing people.
Yeah.
You know, if you've got someone wise with you who can make observations.
Why are they trying to ban cigarette smoke if they want to kill us all? That's a real quandary for me. You know, there's all this stuff, talk about eugenicists and, you know, culling the useless eaters and stuff. Yet the biggest anti thing anywhere is smoking. You know, they don't want anyone to smoke. But is it just to see how they can control us, or are they doing it for? Is there another reason for it? I don't know. Because cigarettes are $50 a packet here. $50 a packet.
That's disgusting.
Is smoking banned in pubs in Australia?
Yes.
It's not to ban the smoking. Ban the pubs.
You're not allowed to get drunk in the pub now, are you?
No, not allowed to get drunk.
They don't want people getting together and being able to talk in a way that can't be monitored like this, where we're talking can be. And what you do is you close down the pubs.
Well, that's happening anyway. There's something like 200 pubs a year closing down in Australia. There's four just in the small area I am that have closed in the last year.
So that's why they're banning smoking, because if you have one person who smokes, it's just like it's pain, isn't it? Unless they have a beer garden.
Well, you can still smoke in beer gardens, and in the gambling rooms, the pokey rooms where they've got the machines, you can still smoke in there. They're not stupid. That's how the pubs make their money now. Yeah.
Well, that's why they're closing down.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, there's a reason for it. The developers are getting onto. Deliberately running them down to the ground. The developer gets in and then puts a block of units up because we're getting influx of migrant, you know, a lot of expat, middle-class Chinese coming in big time.
But if you want to...
Excuse me, then. Expat, middle-class Chinese.
Sorry. I meant middle-class Chinese. Forget about expat. Get rid of that word. Delete.
Oh, I was going to say I missed that entire conspiracy, man.
Sorry about it. Yeah, so, but I mean, it's still beyond me, though, why there's this really heavy regulation on nicotine. And as I said, $50 a packet. So ask Rollo how much it costs him a week. I'd say he'd be spending $350 a week of smoke. Minimum.
That is metal.
That's true. And it's, I can't believe I go in there and you see, so a packet of 50s is $50 or something or other, you know. You see these people buying packets and they don't seem to be wealthy. So something's not being bought at home. I don't know how they got the money to be able to afford that. It's like it's a mortgage repayment.
Mm.
Just, you know, and then booze, you go for a drink now, they've destroyed that. So the pub where you used to sit there and have a good laugh and be able to look in each other's eyes and make fun of each other and having a, you know, good conversation, they put TV screens on every wall. Every wall is a TV screen with gambling or that stupid UFC fighting gladiator bashing each other's brains in, or football or rugby league. And so you can't have a conversation anymore. You can't, beer costs $10 a schooner or $8 a schooner or whatever. So we're pretty much in league with England now, the cost of alcohol.
That's terrible, because that was the one thing Australians had.
It was.
Actually, your identity, yours own islands.
Yeah, for social, but socialising, you know. So you've got this, so we haven't got that social network, because Australians are really, 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 because
it's a massive country, man. You've got to meet up somewhere.
That's right, yeah, it's exactly. And so when they tried to introduce an ID card here in the 80s, it got absolutely hammered out of the politician nearly lost his job to try to bring that in. It, because there's so many expat Irish, expat Greek, expat guys in Yugoslavia, England, that just don't like being told what to do, that have grown up in countries where there was a middle class and an upper class, like England. You know, we don't have that here. You know, you're all pretty much, you've got money or you haven't got money, but you can be living next door to each other still and go to the same school even. So it's a country now that's been changed so much by social engineering of the universities, absolutely hijacked with socialism.
So basically what you're saying is that soon you're going to get a generation of people who are think they know a lot better. Well, not soon, probably about 30, 31 now. Someone who's like thinks they know more than everyone and really can't interact with people.
Yeah, for sure.
As a tendency to upset people all the time. At least putting stuff behind a paywall. No, I'm joking. I think you know where I was going with that. You need a steam valve. And do you know what? The one thing I always wanted to do was go to an Australian pub.
Listen, I shouldn't, when I say that, they're still there. There's still some working class suburbs and rough. Like, I mean, where I'm from is a real ex-working class suburb, which was mainly shipbuilding and submarines and, full of English still. And there's a pub on every, or there used to be a pub on every corner. Now that's slowly going by the wayside, but there's still lots of pubs there and loads of expat UK types. But they're all professionals now in recruitment and, you know, a lot more than there used to be. Recruitment seems to be the biggest money spinning job. I don't know what they do, but they get a lot of money for it. Anyway, we've gone off the tangent a bit from we're on something.
We were talking about space. I mean, let's just bleed and go for a flight of fantasy for the time being. So we can connect the film studios with Jack Kennedy. Right, we can also connect most of the gangster films.
It was recorded that the US in 1898 had more electric cars than non-electric cars, and that the excuse given for them to have been phased out back early then was that they came up with a electric with a ignition system for the petrol cars. Now, I don't believe that for a second that. I don't think that they would have just got rid of those electric cars, and so the Rockefeller boys would have known in 10, 15 years' time, every man will be wanting to have one of those petrol-driven cars, and it's going to make them lots of money. And then they brought in the prohibition to destroy all the people that had their own stills and made their own petrol, made their own ether for their cars and farm equipment by pretending that there was a temperance movement, which then allowed their offsider Jack Kennedy to make an absolute fortune in illegal booze. Same with the Brothmans, illegal booze. Yeah. That money was then used to set up Hollywood. Yeah, that money, the Kennedy fortune, etc., was used to fund a lot of Hollywood studios. He was involved with a lot of the big studios. So that's kind of a timeline of bullshit that they've lied to us with our history about why certain things happened. And it was a real wake-up call when I learned about the prohibition, because, you know, one of the most biggest industries was alcohol, back then, you know, to suddenly ban it, unless you had an agenda. And the agenda was to destroy, to make it illegal for someone to make their own petrol, ether or fuel for their car.
Yeah, pretty much, because what comes with petrol comes with cars, you know, the lot which comes with alcoholism. If they hear all them stories about, you know, people being blind drunk and, you know, illicit alcohol, but that was being done all the time. Anyway, there's a funny thing with people, when it was totally illegal, they had to go to certain places. You hear all these stories about making it, my friends. I know the breweries weren't burned down. You know, these big breweries were still.
Yeah, mate.
Obviously, it was put on them. It was just done at night or done at different, you know, by the people who worked there.
I would say it was just. Everyone turned a blind eye to it and just created incredible amount of corruption and corruptible police types. You know, it was like a perfect way of creating a. You know, like if your plan is in 50 years or 30 year amounts, this is how you do it. You know, you create this to create that, bring in prohibition to make hold of illegal cash money that you can use to finance your film studios, etc., etc., etc. So we're gradually picking up on real history, but way down the end of the wrong end of the line.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not even a case of real history, because that. We're talking about maps and things like that. So we're given things, and if they work out to be 78% correct, we just go with them.
Yeah.
And even if you get down to the nitty gritty and you want to examine uncertainty, you do work something out. It's very hard that you're going to find more than two or three people in the same.
Yeah.
I mean, for instance, me and you don't agree. I can't agree what they are until you say, and then I go, oh, hang on. How about this? And you go, you know what I mean? And that's as far as it goes.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the important part of having a discussion where you're free to, you know, you can disagree, but you're not going to shut down their line of thought. So three people can go in all sorts of directions. That's what they say. If we hadn't been controlled like this by our universities, by, you know, John Dewey via Rockefeller, sending Dewey out there to harmonise every single education system to be the same, remove the trivium and the logic and the critical thinking, and create this race of drones that 50 years down the track not be able to do anything without getting triggered by you know, anyone that says something that's slightly different to their view. You know, we've lost the harmonics of humanity. I mean, we could have gone in all sorts of directions if we hadn't been allowed to. Like, if they had more electric cars in 1898, and they'd been allowed to flourish, we wouldn't be paying for petrol now. We'd have some.
Did they have speed?
What's that, sorry?
Did they have speed?
Probably the same power as the car back then. I don't know. I hadn't even heard that before until there was a quiz on the radio. I'm good at listening to radio.
I think I remember 90 miles to 130 miles.
Yeah.
In the UK, milkmen used to have floats, and they were electric cars.
That's right. Yeah, exactly.
They went for quick, and I thought it was to do with the electricity couldn't make them go that quick.
Have you seen? This has popped in my head. Do you remember the Monty Python Deja Vu episode with the milkman? It's well worth watching. It's be on YouTube. It's Deja Vu, and
you're gonna have to elaborate on that.
Oh, it's so funny. I started watching TV at 5, right? And so I'm badly affected by Monty Python. I got allowed to watch that show, and it's so surreal. And Gilliam, he's came from America, who was, that guy is out there, you know what I mean? If you see Brazil, watch that again. That's
full film.
Yeah, I like Brazil.
That's just,
just brilliant. It's Orwell, and that's another relevant movie today. But Gilliam, that mixture of five guys, but just the right combination, they went all over the place. They didn't get on. Most of them didn't get on together. But together, they produced the most surreal stuff ever. And there's an episode where it starts off the electric milk cart zooming along with the milkman walks in. He asks for the same order, and then all of a sudden he mentions something about deja vu. And then it starts again. And they repeat the same scene about 15 times so that you actually get hypnotized to think maybe, you know, it's just a really good psychology lesson in itself. Yeah. It'll be on YouTube. Too hard to explain. I'm not very good at explaining things.
No, I know what you mean, but there was a stand-up comedian called Stuart Lee over here, and he does this comedy like rant, but he rants for about like 45 minutes, but he's saying, and you know, sometimes when, and it's like that, but it's really repetitive. And someone's posted it, but they posted it three times, looping.
Yeah.
And the amount of people that have watched it and said, I got halfway through this before I realised it was repeating itself.
Yeah.
it's so funny. It took me about, I was 5 minutes into the second bit before, you know, yeah. 5 minutes I was going, hang on. But yeah, there you go. You need to trick someone for a second.
We are so manipulated and easily manipulated. I mean, the NLP stuff, where there was a guy on the radio here who's an Irishman, who's an expert in NLP. He came on and he was demonstrating some stuff with Alex Jones, Alan Jones, and he was giving him, he just talked to him for about 5 minutes, and then he told him to repeat, you know, to make conversation. He said all these things he'd put into his mind. He'd actually implanted numbers and things into the host's mind as he talked and said, this is, you know, gave him a, so that's what NLP is. And it's just incredible. It's a real art in itself.
There was that time where I heard Derren Brown do it. He did it to Richard Madeley.
He's an expert too.
It was so simple the way he done it, but I actually picked up on it at the time, you know, in real life. And he gives me a piece of paper and a pen. I've told the story before. A piece of paper and a pen, and he's sort of saying, like, look, I'm gonna ask you to draw something. And then he carries on talking in the way he does, you know, the skirt around things. But he says, think on it. But instead of say think upon it, he says think a bonnet.
That's right.
You know, a bonnet. And he ends up drawing a woman, Richard Madeley, of a bonnet.
Yeah.
On that word in there. So it's so quick and clever how you can do things.
It would be, you know, when Socrates, Plato, was it Plato or went to Egypt to learn the, allegedly, went to learn the, yes. What they call the hidden knowledge, and there's the secret knowledge or whatever. That would have been
soft.
Thought.
For people, and they're very thoughtful.
Yes.
Instead of thoughtful.
That's right. All our words are spells, you know, the whole spellcraft of words, you know, when we spell a word, you know, it's right in our face, you know, and we've been made to say witch a lot, you know, witch has been introduced into our language it was never there before, and all of a sudden, what's his name, that came up. No, the guy that they think was Shakespeare.
The other one, yes, yeah, forgot his name, yeah. Sorry, Lord.
He was Bacon, Francis Bacon. He came up with a lot of
the
that.
The one who did the King James Bible, was it?
Yeah, that's right. And there's a really good, I think it was Alan Watt pointed out that if you go into, there's a section of Psalm, there's a, that William on his 44th birthday, he got a mention, and he wrote a psalm that put his own birthday in there, and it mentions Shake on it's Psalm 44, I think, and he says something about this Shake is one of the first words, and then 44 letters afterwards is Spear, and it was on his 44th birthday, so the Shakespeare is in that psalm, and that they think Shakespeare wrote the psalms, or Sir Francis Bacon.
Well,
the team that was Shakespeare, because they think that he was so prolific, he couldn't have been one person.
Yeah. But this is what I was going to say quickly about Shakespeare. He's like, this invented all these words. You're not going to invent words for an original piece of work. You're going to have that work in your head. You know, you're not like existential, fucking crazy, fucking God that has to manifest itself into a human, learn the language, and try and come up with a feeling that you've taken from another planet or something. So the fact that he's making up words, or basically he's translating words into an English nuance, proves that, you know, a lot of this stuff must have been copied down, or at least older literature.
It's the science of control.
But especially from a different language or from a different culture that, you know, had a different type of speaking. So obviously that's why you need to introduce words.
Yeah, well, I remember this thinking it was really odd that the Maori had the word for sacred as tapu, right? And tapu sounds awfully like taboo, which means sacred, and they have got allegedly nothing to do with the, they came from the Hawaiian Islands, apparently, yet they have a language that's almost identical in a lot of words to European. So there's some kind of link there, and the special forces here in New Zealand use Maoris and Islanders to get seconded into the British SAS to work in the Middle East, because they are, you cannot spot the difference between them in a lot of cases. They are Middle Eastern looking.
Yes.
And so there's a link between the Polynesians and Middle East that's not in our history books, but it's clearly there.
Yeah.
Just with their language and their looks.
Yeah, because traders definitely worked as the interim between two different tribes or two different, you know, locations. So, you would have people that would know, you know, you'd have polyglots or people that, you know, knew lots of different languages and dialects and stuff like that. I'm going back to films again, but
yeah,
I want to hear your take on when you see Indiana Jones and you see these Nazis, you know, traipsing around the world for these exotic, you know, artifacts, you know, ancient things that are from the Bible and from all these, you know, the sacred or the taboo artifacts from each religion or tribe and all that, and just the way that's been painted into our mind as if that's, you know, a real thing. I'm not saying soldiers were the place. When you look at where people were in the world, everybody was everywhere. The Allies were everywhere. Between them, they occupied the entire planet.
Yeah.
Plane, should I say. Nearly fucked up. So, you know, I mean, that's been put in your mind, and it's not hard to close off even just a small group of islands or a small route, you know, because you're going to have people on one side of a mountain who say, yes, weird people on this side of the mountain, we know the way through. Once they're moved, and then a generation down the line, there's another lot moved, there's a factory built 200 miles away, you know, you can close off 10 million square miles if you wanted.
Yeah, easy.
I mean, we started off talking about Kazakhstan.
Astana.
You know, eight times bigger than France.
Yeah, have you looked on a map? Does it actually show that online? I bet you it doesn't. I bet you they've got it as a little tiny, kind of skinny thing that barely registers a blip when it compared to the actual real size of it, which...
You see, I did have a look, but I think I just zoomed straight in and went straight down to street level. Or something similar, you know, what was there. Like I was saying to you, and you obviously you noticed it yourself, just the imagery, there's almost a duplicate scene for scene, 2001 Space Odyssey. You were talking about the electrics as well, which I know a little about, because obviously Frank Albo mentioned that, but I think we both alluded to when they were talking about nuclear power, we were insisting that that's definitely failed, because obviously nuclear power is...
I'd say nuclear power is just a really simple, did Einstein really say nuclear power is a really great, a really unusual way to boil water? Because I saw a quote from him.
It's a funny life, that fella.
Yeah, I don't know whether he said it or not, but that sounds quite logical.
I think I've heard Ab say it.
Ab said that, it's been mentioned a couple of times, but the nuclear power just being a way of burning off excess electricity and into water, and that's quite logical. Makes a lot of sense. But I think there's just a technology with some of these rare earth metals that produce energy for free without costing us much money that we've had demonized. It's scarce, and you need to pay for block. You need to pay. I don't know what your power bills are, but they're fucking high here. For you know, the coal.
Can you not hear me peddling?
You must have a really good bike chain.
Oh, I'm trying my best, man.
Yeah.
But no, you're exactly right. I mean, there we go. We're back to electric again. So, you know, is this a newfangled
Astana and your spotting of the 2001 space movies, architecture and design?
Well, here we go. I'm wanting to link this just in case I forget it. They buried, they find something on the moon which is buried, which is giving off, you know, some sort of signal and force. So, you know, what's in the soil there, rare earth element?
Yeah.
It's not totally the same, but nevertheless, you know, we have discussed that these things, you know, they're 33 years in the making up until 2001, that's 68 to 2001. And you do say, and I agree with you, that city appeared out of nowhere. My architecture knew about it. There mustn't have been any drawings.
Oh, it's just incredible. It's such an incredible thing. It's one of the most incredible things of the last that I've kind of discovered by the psychologist elbow chat and the hoax busters chat with them. But that city is just a city of the future that no one seems to know about, and it's not being taught about. And even,
you know what, though? It could end up being a modern-day myth, like pyramids were. They always say the pyramids.
Well, I'd love to go there. You know, it'll be a. If I'm going to go anywhere in the future, I think that's where I'll fly to and check it out.
Yeah.
It'll be really.
Well, me and Del Quag were looking at it a while back. We were going over the, you know, the images in the bar, because the bars had the images of, you know, not local football teams like Manchester United, Liverpool, things like that, you know, British football teams.
Yeah.
And it almost looked like, you remember Alf Weider's in Pet?
Yeah.
You know, like their cabin. Yeah. Yeah.
Oz.
Oh, yeah. What was his name? No.
It was the same
Jimmy Nail. Jimmy Nail.
Yeah. Remember Boys from the Black Stuff?
Oh, and that was, what's his name? Yozza Hughes.
Yozza. Yeah.
Shake job, no.
Shake yeah.
but you see the supposedly the local tavern or something, and you're looking at it and you're going, obviously, this is definitely built for local, for the workmen who've been brought over there from working abroad.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, obviously, you know, they've had normal beers, everything is there, Budweiser, you know, everything. So, you know, there has been some activity there, and I looked into, like, cranes, and there was loads of cranes being used over there. Because you can track cranes, pretty much, you know, you can find out where cranes have been, because people, you know, follow them. You know, the owners, especially. It's like train spotting, but for geeks. In fact, crane spotters actually laugh at train spotters.
Crane spotters have ever filled that over here at the moment. I've never seen so many of the things in Sydney.
Aren't they wonderful? They're on the skyline, and sometimes you catch an angle where you've no idea and it looks going upwards.
Why? Yeah. Singapore's the other place to look around. Yeah. All you can see in the miles of giant cranes going up higher and higher and higher. And there's so many cranes around, there's all these dodgy firefighters are getting in, and they're falling over left, right, and centre, rich on the wind blows.
Mr. Original Simulants just come in the chat. Good evening, mate.
What's going on, guys?
Hello.
Eric was taking me around the world verbally. I'm just going to mute and go and make myself a drink.
Okay. Hollow Earth. What are you talking about?
No, we're talking about cranes somehow. I don't know how that turned out, but
the bird.
We're talking about Astana and the power supply that they must be using. That some of the buildings there that are running off a living organic plant material somehow is powering the lights of a couple of buildings there. And the fact that a lot of the architecture is straight out of 2001 Space Odyssey, and I hadn't spotted that, but we just were discussing it before, that Napoleon had noticed that
he thought that he thought it was very coincidental, as a lot of the shapes are exactly the same, particularly the entrance to Astana, the spinning space, the spinning satellites on 231 Space Odyssey are very similar to some of the buildings there. One of the buildings there, rather.
Weird place. It's like the 10th biggest country in the world or something.
Yeah, that's right. And we were also talking about the fact that the maps never really showed that. They may make it out to be quite small, but it's, I think Napoleon saying France fits in there 7 or 8 times.
That's, you know, big, what I mean? Big country.
Big country and absolutely full of rare earth mineral and a lot of the what could be used to use this, to create this nuclear, the yellow cake,
uranium,
yellow cake uranium, which is big here. We've got a lot of that in the top end of Australia, and it's far more abundant in Kazakhstan. And they've seemed to be, this city's powering itself using, without nuclear power. It's clearly using some kind of something that we haven't been told about, that, and I would say it's got something to do with uranium. You probably put uranium and baking soda together. Something really cheap and free and abundant that we could have all our power run quite efficiently, that we've been told in the same way. We ended up talking about how alcohol was banned in the prohibition due to the Rockefeller wanting to make a lot more money on his oil, with Standard Oil, by moving farmers and homeowners' ability to have a still in their garage and make their own petrol. The whole energy lie that we've been given, you know, I would say nuclear power, if in its, in brackets, the quote, isn't produced in the same way as they've said it is, it's probably something really cheap and really easy to run. Well, there's something there that they're using. I don't know what it is, but I'd like to go there and ask some questions.
Is it the capital of Kazakhstan?
Yeah. I believe so.
Asia is weird, you know. We get we have a lot of opinions on the way the New World Order works and stuff, but they're all very Western oriented. You know what I mean? Like everything has to do with the Rockefellers or the royal family, or
yeah,
you know. But really, we live on planet Asia, and
for sure. I think in my mind, the ones we're given to throw the tomatoes at, and I just named Rockefeller and Rothschild and Queen Betty, right, are in fact only just probably the working for someone else or behind the scenes.
There's so much about Asian culture that's, I mean, it's just so foreign. It couldn't be more foreign to me. You know, I
don't
know what's happening in China or Japan or Vietnam or Cambodia or Indonesia or, you know, Thailand or, I mean, it's huge, right? India.
It is, and they're very, I've done a bit of Asia, you know, I've been to a few countries there, and I just think they've done the same trick of getting everyone off the land, removing the indigenous cultures and squashing them into cities where they've all got to ride motorbikes and can't afford cars and work in factories. I went past this factory in out of Hanoi. Might have been a Sony factory. I've never seen anything like it. You know what I mean? Like the car park must have had 3,000 motorbikes parked, and they were the night shift. So those people, the factories there are just beyond anything I've ever seen. Everyone seems to be, they're really much nicer people, and you get genuine. I didn't meet anyone. I thought everyone was traveling around there. They're lovely people, but I think they're more easily controlled and not as rebellious as we might be, so to speak.
Would you say that's because they're more intelligent?
That's
a theory being bandied around.
Look at the Chinese. I mean, and the Indians. My only intelligent conversation in my 3 days in Sydney is getting taxis with taxi drivers or Uber drivers from Pakistan or parts of India, and they've got critical thinking, well educated. They're doing a engineering course while they're over there driving, you know, getting $10 an hour driving. They're all really open to talking about stuff, whereas my worst conversations I have with people I grew up with
particularly the Australians that are under 50, does seem to have been educated in this really fucking, I don't know what it's done to them, but they can't talk about stuff without being cynical or thinking as some kind of lie about it, or they just believe everything they've been taught at school and watched on TV. So Asians are, yeah, probably more intelligent, yeah.
There you go. Right, I trust you, because there you go. You've been about more. You see,
I haven't. But, you know, like, the biggest argument I have is a friend of mine who has travelled extensively. He believes that everything they say about Syria on the news is true, and he's been there. But I think he's the kind of guy that would only have hung out with other cunts that eat like him, that they're in there for the money, you know, because he's in advertising and marketing, and he would have only dealt with people that had that kind of love of greed of money. So he just listened to what their views were. But I hadn't been to the Middle East at all, so I can't quote on that one. But
one thing I was going to say then is I have noticed, and it's not racist or anything like that, but, you know, if you do get a lad who's Chinese and born in Britain, what's the word, integrated into society, and, you know, just exactly the same as us, because we've known a few Chinese lads.
Compliant, would you say?
Yeah, just the same as all of us, just everything the same. One thing they did have is they have parents who, you know, added a bit more pressure. Same with the Pakistani lads. A lot of them.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Because, I mean, a generation ago, most of the Chinese and whatever were just, you know, working their guts out, but making sure they were highly educated.
Do you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of, you know, a few quid and they end up sending the kids to, you know, like a grammar school or something.
Yes.
Yeah, well what seemed to happen with... where I was, because I was in a boys' school called Burnage, and it wasn't a case of that. It was a case that they get extra tutors in, not in the school, you know, a tutor to get used for one of the brothers, and then 2 years later when the other lad was doing the exams, you get put in. And then 9 times out of 10, it was probably a cousin who was doing A levels.
Yeah,
you know, it was 2 or 3 years ahead. I mean, once there's a level set, they adhere to the level, if you know what I mean.
Hmm. The Chinese here, though, will go to school 7 days a week. They have weekend school just for doing kind of the next year's program of whatever's coming up. So they do 5 days at the normal school, and then, you know, this is not all of them, but a great majority. There's an awful lot of tutoring and weekend school work to keep them above, and their average pass. Their higher school certificates here is, you know, 10 points on any locals. They really are high achievers. At regurgitation education, though, talking about, I mean, simply learning how to copy something, like their music, for instance, and their piano players, they're as fantastic.
Oh, yeah, second to none.
Second to none, but can they create? Have you ever heard of a Chinese coming up with a
I even went looking a few years back.
Oh. Well, they're churning in their head. If you listen to the traditional music, it's actually really disturbingly, you know, that's like, it's all over the place. It's almost like the Theo Adorno's atonal music, you know. They're into a very strange kind of... The timing's different. Yeah, I'm not a musician, but I love music, so I can talk about music all day. But I don't know the techniques of it. But I just know that I don't like Chinese music.
Italians for music, Chinese for food.
Yeah, right. There you go. The Indians, though, I think India has had the same system of control for 5,000 years allegedly. You know, going back to the Vedic stuff, that they've had their control mechanism was using the vegetarian, you know, the public, the grain, you know, let the poor eat the grains and the vegetables, and the rich Brahmins that rule the country eat what they like. There's something in that. I mean, they haven't lost control. They've had the same gang in control of India since way back, whereas China, you know, got slaughtered. The English went over there and did the opium wars and
You're listening to another hour of Fakeologist Audio Chat on Fakeologist.com.
Yes, I was really intrigued to see Chairman Mao was a Yale graduate when I read that, and that made a lot of sense. You know, how they and they would have, you know, when they went around there in this, and I believe they would have just moved any, they were killing the educated, basically. So the Chinese that were part of the original dynasty that was into pacifism and thinking, you know, free thinking and nice art and stuff was absolutely removed and slaughtered, and they painted everything black. I mean, we get a lot of Chinese, vintage Chinese furniture here, and it's all, they've just, you can see it's been painted black, and that's
like, he's like Cromwell.
He was exactly like Cromwell, same model exactly, you know, going around there and removing, like, what the Irish, particularly the Irish and the Scottish, that had that rich heritage of the clans and the oral history that they could recite, grandfather, and where they came from. All those societies were decimated. So we've only got this bullshit history that, as, you know, like John Le Bon saying, he can only go back 300 years and find. Sure, that's when they started removing it. And they used that, the Jesuits and the other lot go in there. And
all you do is you just get it, take it, rewrite it, put it back.
Put it back, yeah, of course. And the date system, I mean, I wouldn't trust any research that I could do on the internet anymore. When I saw the other day, I think I was mentioning there's a friend.
I've been waiting 2 years to hear someone on here say that.
Well, I'm sorry. It's the other day I was at a friend's place, right, and he's in litigation over a book that got published that inferred he was a something very nasty, and he's in the middle of a law process of to have the original book, which is a bestseller, pulped. And he showed me on the online of this particular book that he's suing against. As we were looking at it, the words started disappearing. Like, all his references to him disappeared off Kindle. So they actually, all your internet is basically sensed. They can change dates. They can remove bits as you're reading the book. It's just like what Orwell said at the time, you know, except though he was using hard copy newspapers, cutting pieces out and throwing it down the burner that burned all the history. Nowadays, with the press of the button, they can go back and change the dates of the original. They could put a date of 1962 on the Irish Book of Kells if they wanted to. And if you were going to be researching online, you're going to say, well, I'm afraid I've come back tonight. It's only 1963 that book was published. Because I've got it here. It says it on my back mirror. You know what I mean? It's like...
Do you know what you've just said there? You've just said little bits out of every film. You've said it out of War Games. And changes his changes the, you know, his grades. Does that in Ferris Bueller's Day Off as well. In Capricorn 1.
Yes.
They changed the guy's house, basically. She's got magazines that have been going there for ages. She's got rent.
Oh, I gotta watch that again. I must get that.
But I mean, it's snappy, they're on point. But these things are thrown in like that. And they're always thrown in gimmicky. It jumps to go and change that back. You know, you get him Back to the Future. I tell you what, that's the bane of my life, Back to the Future, that film. It's got so many nuggets in. It's got everything in it. And it's, obviously, it's the Wizard of Oz. It's the best Wizard of Oz I've ever seen. There's a part in it, though.
Oh, God. I was going to say, have you heard the synchronicity of Wizard of Oz and Pink Floyd, Dark Side of the Moon?
There is a video on YouTube as well.
So basically, if you start back the Dark Side of the Moon at the same time as I think it's so many seconds into the album of the Wizard of Oz, and then play the Wizard of Oz and Dark Side of the Moon at the same time, but you have to go play it from a certain, it's probably got 911 seconds or 113 seconds, yeah. I don't know, but it mysteriously looks like the soundtrack to the film. It has coincidences all the way through. Everything blends into it really smoothly. Now, whether that's just a synchronicity, and I believe that, I don't think that But, you know, that album was done by Alan Parsons from Abbey Road Studios, you know, so it's like...
Very stealthy.
And, you know, Alan Parsons is just one big fucking enigma himself, you know, the symbology and imagery in his albums and his songs. So there's something in that. So you can... The whole synchronicity thing's a science in itself. I don't understand it, but there's so many times, as you know, you'd be talking about something and something will happen.
Well, I still maintain God's the DJ. He's definitely a DJ because he just puts songs on for you.
Yeah. Well, there you go. That's a good analogy. Someone's already done that, haven't they? There's a great song. Whoever they were. I had something interesting that just popped into my head and I fucking lost it. Anyway, hopefully it'll come back again. Something the dark side of the moon.
Oh, synchronicities. You're talking about, you know, you believe in synchronicities, but...
Oh, for sure.
Oh. Well, it's like when you started off when you said, you know, one posing as a space agency that makes films, and the other one's posing as a film agency that goes into space.
So it's the classic inversion. So I'm big on inversion at the moment, and, you know, how you're given the complete opposite balance, you know, like the as above, so below. Images everywhere, fucking everywhere. Start looking for that symbol, you know, it's everywhere. The old Mason or whoever they were originally, but
seems to be them early alchemists.
Alchemy, it is alchemy, yeah, for sure.
The funny thing is you see it in films, devote everything to, and although in the film it doesn't seem to make sense to us at the time, you know, it works out in the end. Same with, like I was talking about the Indiana Jones films, he has his dad in that. So in one of the films, he's got his father running around, and he ends up on a beach being literally going to be strafed by a Japanese fire, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And, you know, he pulls out an umbrella and he starts quoting from a quote from, like, from, you know, the Bible. And let the birds in the ground be arrows or something. Anyway, I think it might be Alexandria, something from Alexander the Great. Obviously, before you know it, there's a flock of birds and the plane flies into it. But there's your magician fear, and it's put in every film going.
Everything by Spielberg, anything with Tom Hanks in it, you've got to look at it in a different perspective as saying, what are they trying to tell you? What are they not trying to tell you? You can't look at his movies anymore like that. They're really dodgy, you know.
Yeah.
I see someone talking about that movie Maximum Overdrive, the Stephen King book.
The one with the green, where the green goblin.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, the internet, when you look at the Internet of Things, which is clearly coming out big time, you know, your toaster and your toaster telling it, reporting you're using the wrong bread and your, and your kettle informing the government that you've had more than three cups of teas in the last hour, you're a bad citizen. And that movie, King's put in a very strong allegory to the Internet of Things. It's well worth watching again to see seeing it under a new light. There is so much in Hollywood. There's no two ways about it. I don't care what anyone says that's put in front of you to fucking baffle you. Or to implant things as NLP or psychic linguistic, probably not a psychic program.
Would you go with the point system? You know, is it in China they have a point system?
Yes, yeah, it's not called point system. It's called the credit, social credits. We'd be fucked, all of us.
Would you comply with it?
Would I? Yeah. No, it's... I just stay out of the fucking algorithm that's doing it. I mean, I don't need the internet. I mean, I'm saying that I'm walking around attached to it right now, but you do need it because really, the hardest part in the future will be if you want to, you know, because you're not going to find any like-minded people within a mile of each other these days if you're lucky. So the only way to communicate is via online or to discuss things. And I think if you look at the internet in China, it's incredibly censored. Unless there's apparently a few codes you can put in there to get past it. And I think you type Google backwards, is it, or type something backwards into your search engine, and you can do anything you like.
But they probably know about that, or I don't know. But social credit system, though, is just will be what food are you buying? You know, when you go and scan your card, that they've trained us to do, and even I do it sometimes in Woolworths, you know, to see what cat food, how much, you know, you own a cat, you own this, you own that. Google will send you those adverts for cat food and stuff like that. So it's a big marketing thing, but it can be easily turned around to be a controlling mechanism where...
Definitely.
And you've heard, I'm pretty sure that's true about the phone call thing, that if you phone someone over there with whose social credit system level has gone down because they've been saying nasty about the government, the phone either rings differently or you receive a message before that they answer saying, letting you know that this person may, just talking to him may remove your points as well. Did you know that?
No, that's mad days.
That's real, okay? So look into that. So they got a phone system. And I know a few Chinese. I certainly know lots of people that go there for business. Huh. And they all... No one's really, you know, it's not going to affect us. I don't know how it would be introduced over here. People would really ask. But if you've not, I've spoken.
Yeah, was that vote to have a boat called Boaty Mac Boat.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. Boaty the Boat Face. Boaty the Boat Face.
Oh, yeah, Boaty Mac Boat Face.
Yeah, yeah. I noticed something about the Chinese, and I spoke once to a Russian guy who'd, grew up in Russia, and his father had been targeted by the authorities and he got beaten up by the authorities. He was telling me, he said, you know, he had to get out of there, and they went to live in Canada. Anyway, I started talking to him about other stuff, and he literally, he'd been educated into the communist, you know, system through the 70s and 80s. His face, and this happens to Chinese as well, if you're talking to Chinese about something that they think might be getting them into trouble, they just walk away from you as you're talking to them. They kind of close off. That's true. And I know what the fuck's happening there. And it's the system that they apparently in China and Russia, or in a communist state, they used to deliberately get people to go around and test you, like make conversation with you, just find out if you were anti this or anti that, and trick you into talking about it. And so that you had to watch out for what you were saying. And I've seen that reaction when I've, especially the conversation that I could have with, you know, they kind of just kind of walked away as I was in the middle of a conversation about, I might have been talking about, you know, my general line of thought, which is completely against everyone else's. And, yeah, they've got that instilled into the Chinese mentality, I think. Don't say anything about the government. Have you seen the footage when Batman goes over to China, you know, the actor from Batman, to try and talk to a Chinese freedom fighter? He's a blind, he's an intellectual in China somewhere, and his name from Batman, the last decent one. The actor.
Oh, I'm not a big
fan. Oh, he's a great actor. He was in Steven Spielberg's Empire of the Sun. He's plays the last Batman. Anyway, he went over there as an actor, you know, like with his, bit of an entourage to try and speak to the guy and get some, publicity on it. And these heavies come and just that big, tough Chinese ex-army or army guys say, like, get the fuck out of here. And they push that, managed to get some of it on film. But they just push them around and throw them out the door and get rid of them for coming over to talk to someone about stuff. So I believe China's really, are really still under the thumb over there.
Mm.
I don't think that's fake. And I believe that, you know, you get caught and jailed over there if they think you're doing any espionage business-wise. There's been plenty of cases of that over here, of executives being jailed for talking out of school or doing something in that country. So, yeah, the phone call stuff, that I believe that. I can believe they'll bring that in here one day, you know, if you've got the new generation of people like me, have, you know, in the hobbling about in their wheelchair not too far away. That the new kids will be, kids want to be on, we got a VR machine, the other, you know, VR that plugs into the PlayStation, and that's
going to be just go berserk. That'll be the next thing. And the kids can play ping pong with someone in China. Probably not in China. Ping pong with someone in, they're playing with someone in Las Vegas. And you're having a real game.
I thought you said not China because they'll probably get beat.
Yeah. Hey, it's fucking realistic. I swear to God, you know.
I was just like, that's like anti-racism.
It's not, you're not wrong. It's just like going in for an IQ test against the Chinese. You're not going to win. They're just fucking
This is an ongoing argument between two people that are like reading because they're both clever. And do you know, I literally don't think you should be asking questions. And, you know, because like you were talking earlier, people remember stuff. And when you're talking about the music, you know, how much can they create? And intelligence has got to be attached to creation.
No, that's true. So that's completely true. So IQ and regurgitated education is two different things. So yeah, for sure.
I agree.
They can go 7 days a week and learn all of the particularly engineering, right? That kind of thing. They can learn every mathematical formulae, regurgitate it, and produce the right answers for that exam. Whereas, you know, if it came to creating that formula, I'm not so good at, or I haven't seen a great deal of it. But then who's to know how much, you know, the research that Jan Irvin come up with last. Well, he had some really good guys, a couple of young American guys, one's an engineer, and they're on his latest podcast as a round table discussion on gravity. Do yourself a favour, you particular, yeah. Napoleon, go and listen to that, because these two guys were only young, but us, you know, neither of them believed in the gravity, one's an engineer, so he knows his stuff.
Mm.
And their whole gist of basically, the same gang of guys back in, you know, 300 or 400 years ago went over, took the Vedic scripts, took the Indian architectural knowledge that they used for parts of Egypt and stuff like that. Like, they reckon the Indians had a lot to do more with the pyramids than the Egyptians. And they came back and they basically just tried to, they made into their own bullshit, what they could translate of it. And then got rid of some stuff and added some stuff and gave us that as our science. And they called it seance. And the word seance and science, basically the same thing. You know, the seance you do with the spirits, yes. And science. Yeah.
Yes.
That talk, again, I'm not a scientific mind, but I was getting AM and yeah. You just know in your stomach that you're listening to something that's really making sense. There's some really good chats on there. He's got some good thinkers on. Is Logos Media
now? Oh yeah, these head and shoulders above anything that, you know, I've heard before. I've not listened in a while, but nevertheless, sometimes it gets hung up on a few little things that are a bit neurotic. But I can understand why people watch all these people that people mention, because they all have their own piece, don't they? You know.
Yeah. Well, it's so easy to create a science when you've got cells. You know what I mean? Like you've got a You create a cell of paid professors, you know, one in Germany, one in Switzerland, one in England, and the two of the good universities there. You produce your bullshit, and these guys back it up, peer-reviewed. So the peer-review cell is completely and utterly exposed. You know, he's really done a good job on it. So, that, you know, we're our science, and I think I was saying that Sean, SMJ, he'd like that discussion, or would he'd make a good mind on that show, because he's got the understanding there as well. You know, he's got that scientific mind that can sniff bullshit. If you've got a scientific mind that sniffs bullshit, you're onto a winner. You know what I mean? Once you see a lie and are prepared to stand up and argue with your everyone else out there that had this shit regurgitated in their head by universities and your schooling for 15 years. I mean, if you've got an independent mind, if you've been to university, you're a miracle.
Yeah.
Don't you reckon? I'm just glad I never went, because I would have ended up like my brother and a friend of mine. They can't even look at what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know. Do you know what? And a lot of stuff that's come out since, but let's just say, you know, the free thinking people coming online and talking about different things. A lot of these people, you can see they're having a crisis in the career.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
You know, I mean,
the classic one though is the global warming. It's such a, clearly such a fucking load of shit. But the, as Orwell said, you know, you'll know when you're controlled by when you've got double think, when you've got the ability to be standing there freezing cold, but believe that it's getting hotter. You know what I mean? That's Orwellian double think in action, and it's everywhere.
It's a perfect example.
They get the funding to prove global warming. They don't get to prove it doesn't exist.
Have you seen the founder and creator of the Weather Network and an ex-scientist fucking give it to the CNN guy on one of the YouTube, saying, he goes, I am a scientist. He goes, you are you're a weatherman. He goes, I'm telling you global warming's fake. He goes, I created this channel. And he said, don't talk on top of me. You know, the guy tried to shut him up. Like, he's in his probably 70s. And he fucking gave it to him. It's on YouTube somewhere, you know, where he just said, you know, this is utter, it's just fake. It's, you know, it's not true. It's getting colder, if anything. And I know I'm roaming around here today, you know, with a jumper and long pants on, and it's quite cold here, yet it was 31 degrees on Saturday. Now it's 17 degrees. The weather's just going silly, but that's what it does.
Yeah, you know? Cycles, isn't it?
It's not big cycles, but 670-year-old, I mean, using that Antarctic sea ice, those core samples, and tree sample, you know, I believe in that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah, the tree.
That they're trees. Well, trees will not fucking lie, you know. You can go cut an old tree down, you'll see whether it burned that year and burned that year. And,
well, that's what they did. You know, about how long ago was it? The global warming university scam thing.
Leeds University.
That's it. The whole point was to get rid of the tree data, because they said, because that's what they were trying to get hide, the tree data, and they're saying, well, it's not. They reckon it's not, because the tree data doesn't show global warming, or, well, it can't be accurate then if it doesn't show warming.
It's just unbelievable. And there's these credible people standing there, you know, with their Antarctic vest on. And the funniest thing yesterday, I saw this, is, you know, the storm in America at the moment. There's a mainstream media weatherman, and he's standing there and he's doing the his best impersonation of Marcel Marceau walking against the wind to say, you know, it's coming in. I've never felt wind like this before. And he's walking backwards, and behind them, he doesn't overshot. A couple walk past, and one of them's got, like, you know, loose clothing on. It's not even blowing. And he's just, they kind of stroll past the back of the footage, and it's on. It's still on there if they haven't removed it. It's so funny. And it's like the wind is probably, you know, a bit of a breeze, and the guys are amping it up, like, you know, like they do with the weather now. If you watch CNN, they have weather, the bright red flashes of doom, you know, like crazy weather and, you know, wild storm, really terrifying everybody, you know. And once you've woken up out of this bullshit, you just sit there laughing at everything. So
yeah.
I don't get depressed about any of it. I'm getting more laughs out of it, if anything.
Well, live stream chat, that's what the BBC was promoting in 2001.
As?
If you go into the live stream chat.
Yeah.
That's what the BBC was. Well, that's no good for people listening. Snowball Earth. Horizon, Special Horizon is the, they're like science, program.
Yeah.
So it was all about, that we're going into the next ice age.
Really? Well, there you go. Yeah. Well, I go by, a local, there's two, my sources of the weather. I go, sadly, he's just had a stroke and he's out of action now, but a guy called the Moon Man is in New Zealand. He's a, uses the lunar cycles, and he puts out an almanac, or he did up till last year, and he'll tell you if it's going to rain next year on Tuesday, May the 3rd, with about, I think he's got an 80 to 94% accuracy
on those dates. So unless there's been a whole lot of cloud seeding or bullshit going on, he'll be right. And he said that the moon cycle's going 33 years or whatever, there's these conjunctions of cycles that he said that you'll get the same weather pattern as it was 56 years ago, basically. Whatever, I'm not sure the date, but it's over a lot of period. It's over decades. It's not over weeks or months. And there's another guy that uses the sun, the solar explosions on the sun, the solar flares. He said that we're going to get a really cold winter this winter, and I told people about it, and people said, "Oh no, you know, global warming, da da da." And it's been fucking freezing. You know what I mean? Absolutely freezing. And I keep telling this, my friend, my flatmate, he's been at university for 20 years. He's a full time student, right? He told me, in all honesty, he said that the reason why it was cold today is these giant blocks of ice floating off the coast of Australia that melted off Antarctica, and the wind was blowing off. And I said, they cannot accept the sun as responsible for our weather. A university guy will just give you this global warming claptrap that they've been given, the Antarctic melting. You know what I mean? And he said that with all honesty, and he's 55, highly educated architect, engineer, town planner, and he's but indoctrinated into their science, fucking science with a P, you know? It's just incredible. They can't think for themselves. They won't look at nature and the cycles of nature. You know, let's say cut a tree in half, look at each year's growth patterns, it's all there. You can see that there was a fire when it was first, 30 years ago. There was a bushfire went through there really bad. You'd be able to see that. It's just so easy, you know. Nature really is easy to read, you know. We had ants going berserk, building giant, mounds around the place at the front yard. I kept running out and spraying with water to try and get rid of them. They kill the grass so they can form a hard cell on top of the grass so that when it rains heavily, it doesn't go down their nests. So that they knew a month winter came that it was going to be cold and wet. And how would they have known that? Solar sun patterns, radiation. Mm. Right? They know that. It's just that they know these things that insects know. So we've lost the ability to read nature. Well, not we. They, the majority, prefer to watch, have CNN, some fuckwit, come on there, pretending that it's heaven. You know what I mean? Telling us that it's got a degree in a degree in journalism, telling you science. And yesterday, of all people, bragged out of the blue, Han fucking Solo is now telling us that global warming is true and we need to get rid of. So Harrison Ford's gone on a rampage against the global warming deniers. Once they got to do that to you, you know that you're winning. You know they've got to bring out an actor, like George Clooney, to tell you the moon landings are real.
Yeah.
They're using Harrison Ford to tell us that climate change is real, that we need to stop denying science. That's what his words were. He had a big speech. It's like, fuck off. I mean, if there's an actor with less credibility than him, I don't know. You know, he's just an ex-carpenter, good mates with George Lucas. You know, he can't act. He's just a mouthpiece. He's generally liked by most people, though. They would have done loads and loads of surveys of who do you trust. Which actors do you trust? And it would have been Harrison Ford and George Clooney. Not in my books, but in your Woman's Day readers and your Woman's Magazines readers. So he's now telling us what we shouldn't be talking about and how we shouldn't be denying scientists.
I've dropped in the chat an Armstrong and Miller video clip. You don't need to watch it now, but I suggest you watch it. It's dead funny.
Are they the comedians that do the...
Yeah.
There's some great stuff out there that I'm... Now, there's a couple of great English comedians. The something-something effect their surnames, but they've got some really funny stuff. The ones that did the hilarious joke about what's that when the homeopathic bear? The guy goes into the pub and he gets a
fills it up with water and throws one drop, a little tiny dropper of beer into the thing. So this is the homeopathic version.
I know what you mean about the global warming though.
Yeah, it's going to get colder, if anything, if that's what the science of solar sunspots say, that we've got really low things, you know, really low solar radiation levels at the moment. And that dictates the cold, things getting colder. Apparently, last time it was this cold, and their records are pretty accurate, I would say. They go back to the, you know, early universities and records of, you know, and Chinese also have got really good old records. We don't know what was removed and what was destroyed by the Chairman Mao's march through removing their history, which is something that they really, you can see it happening now, can't you, with the using the universities to, you know, remove statues, get protesters to, you know, the history is being taken away from us as we speak.
Yeah.
You know, we're not allowed to talk about Captain Cook. You know,
Wikipedia, isn't it? Wikipedia. I wouldn't. Don't sponsor. Don't. Well, if you're gonna give money to something, don't give it to Wikipedia. Give it to Fakeology.
Wikipedia. Anything with a big W on it is dubious. That symbol, the W, that seems to be everywhere, you know, the two V's together or whatever, that symbol in front of like most words is dodgy. I look around and I see it everywhere now, you know, like the Wonder Woman logo, she's got it on the Worldwide Wrestling. There seems to be a real symbol, but there seems to be something about that symbol.
Mm.
And Wikipedia has got it in big letters, but even Wiki sounds wicked, you know, I don't know, not to be trusted. It is a great search, but how?
Hello, Dave.
Can't I just go on there now and edit and alter things?
Greetings.
Hello, Dave.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Can you alter Wikipedia? If I want to alter the history of whatever, can I, as a person, just go on there and do that?
I think you can create an account.
Yeah.
Some
stories that were locked down, you know, the fake ones that the government wants to push.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, you go.
They had one story. Remember, if you recall, the Bundy Ranch. Yeah, it was an American hoax story in the desert. It's called the Bundy Ranch. And what I did was the morning that event was going on, the news, I went to the wiki page because they had already had a page ready to go because it just popped up almost right when the news was so-called breaking. So they popped up there. But what I did was I went into Wikipedia, and at the time you didn't need an account. So I went and I changed the actual the map coordinates. Instead of taking them to the Bundy Ranch, I sent it to the Bunny Ranch, which was a prostitution house in Nevada.
That's a brothel.
It's a brothel in Nevada. So I sent them to that. And then so it stayed like that at least a day and a half. It stayed like that. They didn't catch it. So anybody clicking on the story would send them to that webpage.
that's activism for you.
Yeah, so. But yeah, they've clamped on me. I've had several accounts shut down at Wikipedia because I would put in, reformat it to where I would leave the official story the same, but then I would put a new header down below and I would put other thoughts or other theories, a little column, and then I would put in my own explanation of what happened.
Of course, I wish I knew how to do that.
Yeah, and then sometimes they'd last an hour or two, and sometimes they would almost be on it immediately.
Yeah, as long as you can screenshot it, if you could screenshot it, then put it on the Wayback Machine, and so it's there for someone to see, you know. That's fantastic.
I used to make videos at the same time I was doing it so that at least I'd have it uploaded to YouTube so people would see it. I mean, it's really just for a laugh more than I'd expect it to go anywhere.
No, but that's called activism. That's positive activism. I've got my doubts about, I look at Wikipedia every now and then, I Google something and
and I'm using the word Google, you know, as a way of, I search for something, and I don't trust what I'm reading. It's, it does give you a good kind of basis on music, maybe, or whatever, but as far as science and current events go, forget about it. It's not useful.
I made one legitimate change, which is still up on the Wikipedia color spectrum page, and that is because whoever had written it, they did a halfway decent job, but they had missed some of the parameters for specific colors. So what I did was I put those parameters up there, and then I went to the bottom and I added the footnotes to the actual references that I used. And so that was not to BS anybody, or not to make fun. I did that specifically to add more detailed information to what a subject I was interested in, but also because I used that information when I was in the tech business building heads for hard drives. So I put in a lot of the industry standard information that is not only used in the U.S., but also used in Asia and Europe, because it's a standardized system, being that everybody has to have a certain standard for hard drives, because a lot of the hard drives that we built here, we also had put together in Ireland and places like Seagate, who had plants in Europe. So there had to be a uniform code, basically.
Yeah. Ireland is really big on the IT front, or certainly was.
Yeah.
I think it's something to do with the tax.
You think? I think Apple are building a big studio, or a big something there. Apple's made
Before it crashed and it went into loads of debt, probably by Desert Design, it was called the Tiger Economy.
Yeah, have you seen the Star Trek episode, The Apple?
That what?
It's called The Apple. It's Star Trek, the original series. And it's about a giant computer that runs a planet. It's well worth looking into that one.
Oh, yeah.
And it's called The Apple, by odd coincidence. And then, you know, the Beatles then used their company Apple, and then Macintosh mysteriously turned into the Apple. So, I mean, that symbolism kind of in your face. But that Star Trek episode, Roddenberry was out there with his thinking and his creativity and his pre-thought.
But that's really just another version of the same thing with the idea of Eve biting the so-called quote-unquote apple, because then the apple became the fallen system that we all now live under. So I always find it how interesting how, when you look at the base of a lot of these stories and what's claimed as being creativity, it's just really from borrowed work.
Oh, absolutely. It all goes back to that, the same old myths and legends.
Right.
I mean, look at the Greek ones, then straight into the Bible. You know, there's always 12 of this and 12 of that. You know, 12 constellations. You know, 12 Jesus, 12 disciples, and blah 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 blah.
Numbers are very important. That's why it deals with wavelength. And it deals with colors and tones and tunes and things. So it's really it goes to the base structure of the environment we live in. So when people are ready to really, quite frankly, understand the coding of this existence we live in, they have to look into those subjects to understand what's being said to them. Because otherwise they're just really debating and arguing about details of a system versus looking at the makeup of the system.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I can see that, but that's the subject all into itself. It just gets deeper and deeper and deeper when you look at it. But that's where you've got to have your open mind.
I'd like to plug my Mind Computer video series for to explain that. Yeah,
is it on YouTube?
It is. I did a two-part series called The Mind Computer. Two videos, which basically, in a very linear fashion, it breaks down the makeup of a thought.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, quite frankly, what entails and what makes up a thought, full stop. So that goes into every, that goes into a real thought, a false thought, any thought whatsoever, any so-called idea, it's covered within this, this framework that I broke down called the mind computer.
I'll get into that this afternoon.
Yeah, the very interesting stuff.
How long does it go for?
It's a two-part video series, and they're 15 minutes each, I believe. So 30 minutes total. But it, like I say, I when I started that process in 2010 or sometime around there, I wanted to basically come up with a schematic to map out the thought.
Yep.
Yeah, so that was my...
Have you got the link to drop in the chat, the live stream?
Yes. I will go silent just for a minute and find that, then I'll put it in there. All right.
Great.
I don't have any on-hold music to play, sorry.
Where's Bella sit?
Oh, yeah. Right.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. Interesting. Really, the Apple stuff, though, the Apple symbology, and then they're blatant in your face. 911 thing when they brought out the iPhone X earlier than the iPhone 9. So they brought the iPhone X out, and then the next one that's going to come out after they finish their X series is the iPhone 9. And then that will be followed by the iPhone 11.
So yeah. They're bringing out 10, 9.
They brought out 10 before 9. So they give us, so they can still have their 911. Yeah.
The 9 is very important in that's the really the largest number that you have. That's because right. Everything after 9 is just a compounding of the numbers prior to it.
Yeah, so 0 doesn't exist, does it? 0 is
zero is basically a blank space. What I call it is it's the stage you stand on. So right. And then after that you must be 1, then 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. 9 is what's called the tet, or basically think of it as the bookshelves in your mind where all these thoughts are placed onto, and then you bring them into existence every time you want to recall them, and you reanimate them every time you give it thought, right? Yeah. So then they're reanimated for the time that you're thinking about it, and after you're done thinking about it, if it's something you still choose to believe in, it's put back on the shelf. However, yeah. It's never thrown out of mind as being, as being untrue or whatever. So it's basically a place, or it's given a place in your temple. It's given a place to dwell within your mind.
Yeah, the temple being the mind, isn't it?
Well, the temple is, yeah, it's the temple is your mind. And what I like to say when I explain that is if you take your finger and you put your finger on your left and right temple, you feel the proof of life, which is your pulse.
Yeah, the pulse of life.
Yeah, and that's and that is also the proof of life, meaning that let me put my fingers to my temple, I can feel that I am actually physically alive. It's very interesting stuff when you think about it.
Oh, yeah. No, it's my I lose my attention deficit disorder when I start getting to that stuff. Otherwise, I've anything over an hour, or a lot of science stuff just goes through my head and goes off in God knows where. But this stuff, there's something there. I can feel it and see it. And it's going to take, it's not something you're going to learn overnight. I know.
Yeah, in live stream chat, I'm going to put the two that I have part one and part two.
I'll go into them afterwards.
Yeah, and I tried to approach it in several different... See, this is something I've been trying to talk to people about. Because to me, this is really where, after everything's said and done, after you've gone through all the hoaxes and all the different stories about existence and all this, this is where you're going to wind up, because what you're really going to do is explore the thought, because that is what drives you. It's your daily, throughout the day, you're inundated with thoughts. And yeah. Then your reaction to those thoughts is how you are driven, your body drives through the day. And then it also will be the result of those thoughts is how you can recall your day as being good or bad. Yeah. So then if you can then identify the framework of the thought itself, you're quite literally looking at the base code of the system that you live into or that you were born into, because we were all born into this system. And so if we can understand the thought, then we understand the process in which that we exist. So it really is, it's one of those things that once you understand this, you kind of you're above the rest, because the rest kind of just falls into this system. So you're able to control things a little bit better as far as what you allow into your head as being real, because a lot of times you'll find as you explore your own mind that you have a lot of open doors that you need to go ahead and secure, because things are getting creeping into these open doors from places and sources that you will eventually find out are just not true.
Yeah, and that's a lot to do with spellcraft, the word spelling, our own language that we hypnotize ourselves with daily. You know, we've the whole English language that Bacon and crew kind of introduced in the whatever century it was. So I was talking about the word witch. We've got that. They made us use that word witch once, twice, three times in different contexts.
Right.
The whole thing of spelling something, just using that word spell, which, you know, like the spell of a magician or a spell, a word.
I was also thinking about just what's so important about understanding a system of numbers and colors and things like that, is that just the use of language, like you said, what happens and what words are used to describe an event. Let's say that an event happens and it's over with. What's the English word to describe the actions that then follow? It's called an aftermath. So it is it's the aftermath or the after calculations of the event, which is again another way to say the same thing, is where you're using numbers to describe a system. And if we can describe that system, even down to that single thought, which is right now, we just had one. We just had that. But if we can, like I say, if we can just detail that down to its base, it is such a freeing experience.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, it's really, I mean, once you start seeing these patterns in our language and our symbology out there, like, just driving along and looking at the back of cars now, you see the same symbol. Like nearly every major automobile producer has this very similar logo driving along, and got Toyota being one of the big ones with a kind of an all-seeing eye with two horns on the top, or Honda with the two. Hyundai has the same symbol. Mazda's got the same symbol with the two, you know, These things are in your face. You're driving, you're watching, you're seeing the speed signs being, you know, in my case, 911, 911, 911. And then I'm looking at an all-seeing eye or a Saturn alien-shaped car logo that's in your face all the time. And I look up and there's Woolworths, our big shopping center here, has a logo with a big W formed out of an Apple core. You know, they're everywhere. And we've just literally... in a giant, well, matrix is the word for it, of symbolism, of particular symbols that are used repeatedly over and over and over again in front of you, like the wrestling symbol, the big W's, and the Wonder Woman, which is all over the place, that big W pointing crown type shape. But so these things are definitely affecting us, or keeping us from thinking, possibly, I don't know. There's got to be a reason for it. I think it's nefarious. I don't think it's for anything good. I think we're being censored. Our YouTube's, you know, a choice of what we want to look on YouTube or whatever's being removed. History's being removed. I heard you two talking on another podcast, the 911 one, that they're using our thoughts to go back and find their mistakes and then go back and retrieve them. That's so true, completely. You know, they're using the last free thinkers on the planet that are, you know, get together as a way of tidying up their mistakes.
Absolutely, I agree.
Yeah, 100%. And it's quite, well, I'm not say frightening, but it really, every time we come up with something that's of interest, it's going to be deleted for the commoners out there to be able to research.
Yeah.
For sure. So, yeah. So, and, you know, there really is a really small amount of people that are aware, without a doubt. And it's getting small. The more you know, the smaller it gets. And the less likely you have a conversation with anyone that you're close to, no matter how well educated they are, unless they've got a really open mind that allows critical thought and this brainwashing that's been given to them to be able to be, how do you do it? Like, press alt, correct, you know, delete on their brains, you know, the shift, control, caps lock, whatever you press to change your, you know, and your computer's going silly. That's what they've got to do to get out of their mindset. Because otherwise, this conversation would be, I'd say 1% of the planet might be interested in it. Could be less, hopefully more, but yeah, no, it's good. I'll go right into those. They're on the have they appeared on the show link, the talk? Yes, they have. Good.
Yeah, I put some in the live stream chat. Well, yeah, folks, I'm actually gone for the evening.
Oh, so, have a lovely night.
Yeah, well, you have a good night as well, guys. See you, Rachel. Yeah. See you.
See you,
Terry.
Okay, no worries, mate.
All right, cheers. Until
good
next
chat.
Time. Bye-bye.
Good chat.
Bye.
Yeah, good chat. Bye-bye.
I'm going to go soon, too. I'm going to do things. Otherwise, I'm going to roam around the house.
Get trying
to not make noise. All right, have a good night, Rachel.
Yeah, you too.
I'll speak soon.
Good night. See you, Rick.
Over and out.
Hi, I'm Twitter at Mark Manuel, and I recommend that you check out Fakeologist.com.